This is WGNS Action Line, talking with Rutherford County newsmakers about what matters most to you.
Your host, J. Paul Newman, of the monthly District Attorney Show, will now take you on a journey to explore recent Rutherford County court cases, cold cases, and more.
We welcome everyone to the program. My name is J. Paul Newman. My co-host today are Rutherford County District Attorney General Jennings Jones and Rutherford County Assistant District Attorney Trevor Lynch. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime, and we also thank our producer, Scott Walker. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We will begin our broadcast after you listen to these important messages.
Hey, this is Dan with Music World and Drummer's Den. Come in for your guitars, keyboards, drums. We have you covered. Lessons, we got that. Drums and every other instrument with strings or keys. Music World and Drummer's Den, the one-stop shop where you have everything that you might need. Ukuleles, violins, things that they're not expecting to find just everywhere they go. Come see us at Music World and Drummer's Den, 2762 South Church Street, right across from the golf course. Music World and Drummer's Den.
Good neighbors, those affected by Hurricane Helene urgently need you. A donation to the American Red Cross provides meals, shelter, and hope. Join WGNS and Old South, Tennessee's favorite home builder, to have an even greater impact. For every dollar donated at WGNSradio.com, Old South will match it up to $25,000. Go to WGNSradio.com and tap the secure link, and with your help, we can make a difference. WGNSradio.com, make your donations directly to the American Red Cross Helene relief efforts.
For over a decade, on the first Friday of each month, the Rutherford County District Attorney General's Office has been honored to have been provided airtime as part of the Action Line program. During our broadcast, it is our goal to help keep the community up to date on events occurring in the criminal justice system within our community. I believe one of the most important functions of our program is to keep the community aware of unsolved criminal activity that has plagued our community, especially unsolved murders. As part of that function, it has been my honor to bring to you many of Rutherford County's criminal justice success stories as well. I believe there is no greater success than when our criminal justice system works to solve, prosecute, and convict someone who is guilty of the crime of murder. The success is even greater when the case had remained unsolved for over a decade or more. I call those cases super cases. On today's program, we will examine the problems and the issues involved in investigation and prosecution of these unsolved homicides. And we will also discuss why it is so important that we never forget any unsolved murder. Joining me in this discussion will be former Rutherford County District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr. And Bill and I will be joined by former Rutherford County cold case detectives Bill Sharp and Dan Goodwin as we discuss the illustrious and proud history of cold case investigations in Rutherford County. And continuing over the next several months, it will be my honor to profile some of Rutherford County's super cases. I will discuss, along with the actual detectives who were assigned to these tragic cases, the investigation, the arrest, the prosecution, and the sentencing of those who were responsible for these horrific crimes of violence. On a previous broadcast, Bill Weitzel spoke on why our community should be willing to come forward and help solve an unsolved murder. Listen now to Bill's perspective.
Paul, you know this. It's very important on these cases as they get age on them. We want people to know that we don't forget about them. We've got somebody out there that's a murderer. And I know people are sometimes fearful. They're afraid if they give information or something that something may happen to them. And certainly I can understand that. But we need people to come forward and put a violent person behind bars. If this person is arrested and charged and convicted, everybody knows that. And hopefully it would make somebody think twice about taking a human life. So it's dedication on the part of the police and the investigators, but it's also a dedication on the part of our citizens to be a part of the process, because without them, we cannot pursue, arrest, and prosecute these cases. And they're responsible just as much in a way as the police are for making their community a safer place. So I would certainly urge anyone with any information on cases to come forward.
The viewpoints and opinions expressed on this broadcast are the viewpoints and opinions of the speakers and do not necessarily reflect the viewpoints and opinions of this show, its host, or the management of this station. You are listening to WGNS.
Every homicide, every rape, every robbery affects the entire community. People who are victims of these crimes need closure. The people who committed these crimes must be held accountable.
We welcome now to the WGNS microphones retired District Attorney General William C. Weitzel, Jr., and his two special guests, retired cold case detectives, Bill Sharp and Dan Goodwin.
Bill and Dan, when we talk about the cold case unit and the success it's had, I think it all starts with Truman Jones.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And if you would kind of tell the audience about how it began and what it had evolved into.
How it started is obviously with the Laura Salmon homicide case, and that was in 2001 when the arrest was made. Shortly thereafter, obviously we had success with it, with you prosecuting and Jay Paul doing a great job on that. But Sheriff Jones asked if we would be interested in starting a cold case unit. Obviously, when we started it, we were starting it bare. We had no idea what we were doing or how we were going about it. But Truman was instrumental in setting that path for us. So it basically started with the Laura Salmon case and then sort of expanded from there.
Remembering the Salmon case and, of course, having prosecuted it, I know it was a case that haunted the sheriff's department, the original detectives that investigated it, my predecessor, Guy Dotson. I know within the DA's office, when I was an assistant, it was reviewed several times, and I know that the sheriff's department reviewed it several times also. And I guess the moral of that story is don't ever give up and good things will happen.
Absolutely. You know, when Dan and I do in services, we often talk about this. In the way we classify it, it's the day that Murfreesboro lost its innocence.
Yep.
They've had murders before, but this was a young girl, teenager. And, you know, I can't say enough about Miss Hammontree, who is Laura's mother. That, as you know, she probably wore you out with phone calls and Guy Dotson Sr. as well. So it is never give up.
Yeah, and I can recall when I first took office as the district attorney, either the day of or the day after she was in my office about this case, and it was certainly a great satisfaction to all of us that we could finally convict Mr. Gilley of that homicide. Tell us about, as you said, you really didn't know about cold case units or things like that. So, Dan, if you would, tell us how you got involved in it along with Major Sharp, and how do you pick a case to start working on?
Well, in this case, and I was a brand new CID guy in February 2000 when we got information. It came from a tip from Oakland High School. Me and Bill had kind of partnered up before that when I first came over in late 99 and started working on stuff. And everything we worked on, people seemed to go to jail and eventually prison pretty quick. So when I heard about this, I'd known her when I was at MTSU. And I asked if I could help, and our captain at the time, Chuck Thomas, said, yeah, go ahead and help them, mostly because I think they like getting us out of the office. But we had no training in it. Bill had worked on a couple of murders before this. I'd never worked a murder. So we went at it from the position of trying to tell the story of why, despite no DNA or anything at that time, he was the only guy who could have killed her. It took us a couple years, and then, of course, went up to the Tennessee State Supreme Court and finally went to trial. But it was our first one, and it turns out, after we got some schooling on it, that we had just bumbled on the good ways to do it and even invented some other stuff ourselves.
Well, certainly technology and the advancements in technology can sometimes be key in these cases. But my experience and working with you all and on all cold cases, it's really a dedication and what some might call gumshoe detective work, re-interviewing witnesses, tracking witnesses down. And you mentioned getting out of the office. I was thinking about it this morning. You all have been to Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Virginia, Missouri, New Mexico, Wyoming, Washington State, and California, and I probably left one or two states out in working these cold case homicides.
What we find with a lot of other cold case units across the country that we've reached out to when we were in the learning phase, we are very fortunate because we had an administration supervisors that supported this endeavor. It's expensive, and we understand that, but they never told us, no, we can't send you there. But there's times that we've taken trips that the interviews turned out to be, I don't want to say worthless, but not what we expected. So we've been fortunate on that aspect is being supported by the administrations over the years to continue supporting this. And I think out of the list of cases that we had before us, there may be two. If you see more, let me know, that really involved DNA. Everything else that we did was, like you said, General, was getting out and interviewing people.
I will say this, though. I don't think the cold case unit would have ever happened unless we'd had blood spatter evidence and DNA in the Salmon case.
I can remember when we went to Florida and he was arrested and coming back. All the way back, I was thinking, how are we going to convict this guy? We had some evidence in that case that we could not identify, some bodily fluid. We could not identify the source of that. And I thought that would be the defense, and it was, but we were successful in turning that around and making it the motive because of his jealousy and his past acts of violence against Miss Salmon. And I want to pat y'all on the back just a minute with the list of cases. I think we have 7 or 8 different homicide cases that have been solved, a number of defendants that are now serving jail time for their murders. You know, looking at this list and the successes, there's also what I consider personally 2 failures on here from my point of view, not from your all. But I look at the Georgia Walter case, and we probably spent as much time on that case as any that you all worked. And in the end, although we did get a conviction, it was not what we had hoped for. And a lot of that was attributed to the loss of evidence and the passage of time and the court. And I'm not criticizing the judge for his rulings, but excluding some evidence in that case.
Yes, sir. It was sad because we felt we had a good case, and if it had gone trial, we might have won. But you always got to take what you can get, and that's the problem of doing a case that goes back to 1979. Things disappear over years. 2 or 3 different evidence sites, big accident in the old jail that ruined a lot of evidence. But the fact of the matter is the person who put a bullet through that poor girl's head had to take ownership of it. They have been rendered infamous by the state of Tennessee. And they got that going to the grave now, hanging over them.
And I think the other thing that's important here, obviously the victims, but the families of the victims, you know, we work closely with all these families. And I like to say that, put in a plug for Detective DiNardo and former Detective Trammell, they also worked the Len O'Rahn case. But you build a relationship with these families. And some of the families that we've spoken to said, you know, they just want something done, and they realize the obstacles that are faced by working these cold cases, lost evidence and so forth, witnesses and suspects. But we had one tell us one time, you know, just going to bat, even if we swing and miss, the fact that we took it and let a jury decide.
I want to tell you that working with you guys was a real honor. I'm just happy that these cases don't go away, that people are always working. And as you stated earlier, Major Sharp, if you have any information on the case, please contact the Sheriff's Department, and I congratulate you on your success.
I want to thank you and General Newman for the years that you put in with us as well. I think we made a fine team and couldn't have done it without you, obviously. So thank you.
People in the Scottish know they have probably the finest prosecutors in the state of Tennessee. And despite our smaller size, some of the highest court rate and a great conviction ratio here.
We want to thank our guests, Major Bill Sharp and Sergeant Dan Goodwin of the Rutherford County Sheriff's Office.
This is Paul Newman. When we return, we will all go inside the courts. You are listening to this special edition of The Action Line on WGNS.
You know, gift cards are always the easiest gift. This is Peter Demas at Demas's Restaurant. We will buy gift cards and just kind of have them on hand. They're amazing gifts to give to teachers. If you want to give a gift at your workout groups, you know, you have a personal trainer, family members. It's great to give gifts for 16, 17, 18 years old who are just now beginning to date and they need to be able to have some place to take someone on a date to. Gift cards are always the easiest gift. Demas's Restaurant on Northwest Broad Street.
Adam's Place is tailored to you.
Well, I'm on a salt-free diet, so they're very good, Dale.
And exercise?
Well, I do a lot of walking. I have a bed bag.
Peggy Cunningham invites you to
just come on and live with us.
Hi, this is Terry Deal at Adam's Place. Call me for more information about Adam's Place. Phone 615-904-9111.
On Memorial.
Across from Walmart.
This is Inside the Courts. A look at this month's trials, pleas, and grand jury action. Inside the Courts is presented as a courtesy of the Rutherford County Clerk's Office.
Good morning, everyone. This is your District Attorney General, Jennings Jones, and today I will be your tour guide through this episode of Inside the Courts. We begin this segment by stating that none of the defendants named in upcoming trials or hearings have been convicted, and of course, they are presumed by our law to be innocent. With that as a prelude, we will now go inside the courts. On March 9th of this year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call of shots fired at a residence on East Vine Street in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Upon arrival, officers discovered Mr. Davion Gates lying unresponsive on the driveway of his residence, suffering from multiple gunshot wounds. Mr. Gates later died from his injuries. Detective Justin Fugate was assigned as the lead investigator. Multiple persons resided in the residence, and officers identified the 23-year-old Davion Gates as a romantic partner of one of the residents, a 41-year-old female. Also at the residence was 44-year-old Corey Munsell Lillard. Mr. Lillard is the father of several of the female residents' children. Mr. Lillard was also staying at the residence at the time of the shooting. Detective Fugate interviewed multiple witnesses and also reviewed video jail calls between Mr. Lillard and one of his sons that is currently incarcerated at the Rutherford County Adult Detention Center. Mr. Lillard was on a video call with his son at the time of the shooting. Based on a review of this video, as well as evidence collected at the scene, Corey Lillard was charged with first-degree murder, maintaining a dwelling for the use or sale of narcotics, possession of a Schedule II drug with the intent to resell, possession of drug paraphernalia, and possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. A preliminary hearing was held on June 18th of this year before the General Sessions Court of Rutherford County. Probable cause was found to bind the matter over for presentation to the grand jury. The defendant was represented by counsel Mr. John Slager, and the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Matt Westmoreland. On April 13th of this year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call of shots fired on South Rutherford Boulevard in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Upon arrival, officers discovered the body of Mr. Paul Howell in the roadway. Mr. Howell had been shot in the throat and died as a result of his injuries. Detective Andrew Stallnacher with the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as the lead investigator. Also on scene was Mr. Brian Craig, a friend of Mr. Howell. Mr. Craig had sustained a single gunshot wound to the arm. Witnesses to the shooting reported a road rage incident where Mr. Howell and Mr. Craig were nearly run off the road by an unknown driver.
All parties came to a stop at a red light, and the verbal altercation led to shots being fired by the unknown driver. Almost 30 minutes after the incident was reported, Mr. Joseph R. Gann called 911 to report that he was the shooter. Mr. Gann was interviewed along with multiple witnesses, and at the conclusion of the initial investigation, Mr. Gann was charged with second-degree murder, attempted second-degree murder, and reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon. Mr. Gann is represented by counsel Mr. Josh Crane. The state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. This matter was bound over by agreement to be presented to a Rutherford County grand jury. On May 15th of this year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call of shots fired at a gas station on Joe B. Jackson Parkway in Murfreesboro. Officers discovered the body of Mr. Devon Loritz. Mr. Loritz had been shot multiple times in the back and died from his injuries. Officers also located Mr. Eric Mitchell, the brother of Mr. Loritz. Mr. Mitchell had been shot once in the arm and beaten across the head, face, and body. Also on scene was Mr. Juan Charco and his brother. This altercation was captured on a video surveillance camera. Detective William Pullius with the Murfreesboro Police Department has been assigned as the lead investigator. Upon conclusion of the investigation, officers discovered that Mr. Charco and his brother were in the process of transporting a vehicle that was owned by Mr. Lovitz from Atlanta, Georgia to Nashville, Tennessee, without Mr. Lovitz's knowledge or consent. Mr. Lovitz and his brother confronted Mr. Charco and his brother and took their vehicle back at gunpoint. When Mr. Lovitz and Mr. Mitchell were attempting to drive away in their own vehicles, Mr. Charco retrieved a semi-automatic rifle and shot over 25 times at the two men. Mr. Charco has been charged with second-degree murder and attempted second-degree murder. This matter was bound over by agreement and awaits presentation to a Rutherford County grand jury. The defendant is represented by Murfreesboro attorney Mr. Jeffrey Jackson, and the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On February 15th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call of shots fired at an apartment complex on Puckett Creek Crossing. Officers discovered the body of Miss Rebecca Stockton on the floor of her apartment. Miss Stockton had been shot multiple times. Detective Julie Cox with the Murfreesboro Police Department has been assigned as the lead investigator. Miss Stockton's live-in boyfriend, Salim Hamilton, was missing. A manhunt for Mr. Hamilton was ordered, and Mr. Hamilton was located in Corbin, Kentucky. Mr. Hamilton was found to be in possession of the rental car belonging to Miss Stockton and a .40 caliber semi-automatic handgun. Miss Stockton was shot and killed by a .40 caliber semi-automatic handgun. At that time, Mr. Hamilton was charged with possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. He has since been charged with first-degree murder by the Murfreesboro Police Department and has been extradited back to Tennessee from Corbin, Kentucky. A preliminary hearing was held on January 4th of this year, and the General Sessions Court bound the case over for presentation to a Rutherford County grand jury. The defendant was indicted for first-degree murder, tampering with evidence, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and employing a firearm during the commission of a felony. The state will be represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland, while the defendant will be represented by counsel Mr. Chris Fisher. The next court date in this matter is scheduled for October 30th of this year. On the 6th of October of 2022, officers with the Laverne Police Department were dispatched to a residence on Almondwood Place in Laverne, Tennessee, in response to a shooting that led to the death of the homeowner, Miss Robin Taylor. Detective Tanner Noakes has been assigned as the lead investigator. Miss Taylor's sister, Candace Davis, was on scene when officers arrived. After initially claiming an unknown subject shot her sister and ran away, Miss Davis later changed her story and claimed her sister attacked her and she shot Miss Taylor in self-defense. Upon conclusion of Detective Noakes' investigation and in light of the evidence collected on scene, it was determined that Miss Davis was not justified in shooting Miss Taylor. She has since been charged with second-degree murder. A preliminary hearing was held on November 4th of 2022, and the court determined that probable cause existed to bind the case over to the grand jury. The next scheduled court date for this matter is November 22nd of this year. The defendant is represented by Mr. Sean Williams with the Office of the Public Defender, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On the 6th of April, 2022, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to an apartment complex on Old Las Casas Road. The body of Mr. Ryan Walcott was found beaten and stabbed to death. Mr. Walcott was left lying on the floor of his apartment. Detective Julie Cox with the Murfreesboro Police Department has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case. Alistair Jennings, one of Mr. Walcott's roommates, has been developed as a suspect. Detective Cox's investigation has resulted in physical evidence and witness statements that connect Mr. Jennings to the murder of Mr. Walcott. Mr. Jennings was charged with first-degree murder. On August the 12th of 2022, a preliminary hearing was held in the General Sessions Court of Rutherford County. Upon proof presented by the state, the court bound the matter over for presentation to a grand jury. The defendant's next scheduled court appearance is set for February the 7th of next year. The defendant is represented by Mr. Ben Wetzel with the Office of the Public Defender, while the state is represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. On February the 13th of last year, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call in reference to a stabbing at a residence on Ransom Drive. Upon entry, officers discovered the body of Mr. Philip Maddox on a bedroom floor. Mr. Maddox had been stabbed multiple times. Witnesses on scene advised that Mr. Maddox's roommate, Malik Smith, admitted to stabbing Mr. Maddox. Officers located Mr. Smith, and Mr. Smith confirmed the witness's claim that he had stabbed Mr. Maddox. Detective David Miller of the Murfreesboro Police Department has been assigned as the lead investigator. After a search of the residence, collection of evidence, and interviewing of all witnesses, Mr. Smith was charged with first-degree murder. On May 31st, 2023, a preliminary hearing was held and the court found probable cause to bind the matter over to the grand jury. The next scheduled court date in this matter is November the 14th of this year. Mr. Smith is represented by counsel Ms. Whitney Rocky. The state will be represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. On July the 11th of 2022, officers with the Smyrna Police Department responded to a reported aggravated assault. Upon arrival, officers discovered that two brothers-in-law, Mr. Jason Munivong and Mr. Edgar Mercado, got into a verbal disagreement. At one point during the argument, Mr. Munivong pulled a firearm on Mr. Mercado and pointed it at him. Mr. Mercado was unarmed and had not exhibited any aggressive behavior toward Mr. Munivong. Mr. Munivong was arrested for aggravated assault. On April of 2023, a Rutherford County grand jury indicted Mr. Munivong for aggravated assault, and on August 21st of this year, a jury of his peers convicted Mr. Munivong of the offense of aggravated assault. A sentencing hearing is scheduled to begin on October the 25th of this year. The defendant was represented by counsel Mr. Rob McKinney, while the state was represented by Assistant District Attorney Sarah Davis. On September the 27th of 2020, officers with the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a 911 call regarding gunshots on Gunnarsson Avenue. Upon arrival, officers located Mr. Javarius Malone. Mr. Malone had a single gunshot wound to the chest. Law enforcement officers and EMT workers worked to save Mr. Malone, but he did not survive his injuries. Detective Cody Thomas with the Murfreesboro Police Department was assigned as lead investigator. Upon interviewing witnesses, obtaining apartment complex security video footage, and using cell phone and GPS data, Gregory Lyons and Corey Lillard were identified as suspects. At the conclusion of Detective Thomas's investigation, Mr. Lyons and Mr. Lillard were charged with first-degree murder, employing a weapon during the commission of a dangerous felony, attempting to sell a Schedule I drug, and conspiracy to sell a Schedule I drug. Mr. Malone was found to have owed Mr. Lyons $50 from an August transaction. On August the 29th, 2020, Mr. Lyons threatened Mr. Malone for not paying him by sending Mr. Malone an emoji of a coffin with a threatening text message. On September the 27th, Mr. Lyons learned that Mr. Malone was attempting to buy narcotics from Mr. Lillard. Mr. Lyons had gone to Mr. Lillard's home 20 minutes before Mr. Malone and Mr. Lillard started texting regarding the sale. Mr. Lyons went with Mr. Lillard to meet Mr. Malone, and Mr. Lyons or Mr. Lillard was armed with a .357 semi-automatic pistol. Witnesses heard yelling and then a single gunshot. Mr. Lyons and Mr. Lillard were recorded on various security cameras riding bicycles to the location, and then again, after the murder, they were recorded running away on foot. Mr. Lyons' DNA was found on the bicycle located just a few feet from Mr. Malone's body. It was later discovered that just 2 days prior to the murder, Mr. Lyons had arranged to acquire a .357 caliber pistol. On May 23rd of this year, a jury of Mr. Lyons' peers found him guilty of all charges. Mr. Lyons was sentenced by Judge James Turner to a life sentence for first-degree murder. On September the 4th of this year, a sentencing hearing was held to determine the penalty for his remaining convictions. Mr. Lyons was sentenced to an additional 12 years for his convictions for employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony, attempt to sell a Schedule I drug, and conspiracy to sell a Schedule I drug, to be served consecutively to his life sentence. Mr. Lyons was represented by counsel Mr. Will Fraley. Mr. Lillard had previously entered pleas of guilty to facilitation to first-degree murder and attempt to sell a Schedule I drug, and received a 20-year sentence to serve in the custody of the Tennessee Department of Corrections. Mr. Lillard was represented by counsel Mr. Thomas Maynard. The state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Matt Westmoreland and Trevor Lynch. On February the 12th of 2022, the Murfreesboro Police Department responded to a parking lot on Middle Tennessee Boulevard in response to a shooting. Upon arrival, officers discovered at least five individuals who had been struck by gunfire. Two individuals had been shot multiple times, including Mr. Brandon Anderson, who later died from his injuries. Detective Cody Thomas has been assigned as the lead investigator in this case. Upon the conclusion of the investigation, Detective Jacob Fountain charged Mr. Jamar Marks with first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, three counts of aggravated assault, employing a firearm during the commission of a dangerous felony, possession of a firearm by a convicted felon, and reckless endangerment with a deadly weapon. Mr. Marks appeared before the General Sessions Court in Rutherford County on June 30, 2022, and waived his right to a preliminary hearing, voluntarily binding the matter over to a Rutherford County grand jury. On July 25th of this year, Mr. Marks entered pleas of guilty to second-degree murder, attempted second-degree murder, and two counts of aggravated assault. Mr. Marks received a total sentence of 15 years to serve in the custody of the Department of Corrections. Mr. Marks was represented by counsel, Mr. Michael Rexroth, while the state was represented by Assistant District Attorneys Trevor Lynch and Matt Westmoreland. And that will conclude today's look inside the courts.
When the weather's at its worst, we're at our best. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro. FM 100.5, 101.9, AM 1450, TV 11.
Tommy! I can't wait for golf this weekend, huh, buddy? Time flies. Love you, man. Oh, don't forget your knee brace again. We aren't in college anymore.
Moments together matter, so help protect yourself from RSV. If you're 75 or older or 60 plus with a chronic condition like asthma, COPD, heart disease, or severe diabetes, you're at higher risk of landing in the hospital from RSV, and there are no prescription RSV treatments. Check eligibility and schedule your RSV vaccine at VaxAssist.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
As a mom, comforting my family is what I do best. Vicks VapoStick provides soothing, non-medicated Vicks Vapors in an easy-to-apply stick. And it dries fast, so there's no mess. I use it to comfort myself and my family.
Thanks, Mom.
Vicks VapoStick. Soothing comfort for the whole family. And when you need more comfort for yourself, try Vicks VapoShower Max for steamy Vicks Vapors.
Use as directed. VapoStick for use ages 4 and up. VapoShower Max use for adults only.
We're excited to announce that Capstar Bank is now officially a division of Old National Bank. All those friends you've made while banking here over the years, well, they're still there. And so are the delicious, warm, homemade cookies.
In Murfreesboro at 2230 Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard.
Everything you enjoyed at Capstar, still there at Old National Bank. Old National Bank, ready to serve you.
Old National Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
What's the law? Time now for an examination of the laws of Tennessee. This is not intended to be legal advice and is being presented solely for the informational benefit of our listening audience. You should always consult with an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice.
Good morning, listeners. Today's episode of What's the Law will be presented by a special guest. Today we have Miss Grace Giorgio, who is a third-year law student at Vanderbilt. Grace, please tell the ladies and gentlemen a little bit about yourself.
Good morning, listeners, and thank you, General Jones, for having me. My name is Grace Giorgio, and I'm the newest intern at the Murfreesboro District Attorney's Office. Just a little bit about me. I'm a 3L at Vanderbilt Law School, so I live now in Nashville, Tennessee, but I'm originally from Norfolk, Virginia. For college, I moved to Blacksburg, Virginia, where I attended Virginia Tech, go Hokies. From there, I received 2 degrees, one in business management and the other in theater performance. My focus in business school was entrepreneurship, and for most of my time in college, I was pretty set to begin a career in the business world after graduation. Theater and performance was just a side gig for me, but I always thought that I would eventually open up my own business. It wasn't until 2020 that I really started to recognize what kind of society I was about to enter into. The pandemic generally had me worried about getting hired at all, but certainly no way I was going to open up my own business, right? Already established businesses were struggling, but more importantly, crime in this country was soaring. We all saw the aftermath of the so-called peaceful protests. Once major city hubs like Portland, Chicago, Philadelphia, Minneapolis burned to the ground with absolutely no consequence. Manhattan's Soho neighborhood saw mobs rampage down the sidewalks, smashing into numerous luxury shops to steal merchandise. I was working at the Virginia Beach oceanfront when a mob of rioters shot into local businesses, set them on fire, vandalized and smashed through windows of family-owned restaurants and businesses. It was truly awful. At the time, I was working for a small family-owned restaurant. My family used to own a small family restaurant. The fact is, that could have been my small business, my family-owned business. Then you turn to the TV and find out that 95% of rioters' charges were dropped in a number of the largest cities. And that was the launching point for me. That's when I decided that I would go to law school to become a criminal prosecutor. In my junior year of college, all the way up until I went to law school, I worked for a criminal defense attorney because that was the only law office that would hire me without any legal education or experience. But it was in that criminal defense work that I was really assured that criminal prosecution was where I belonged. The moment I got to law school, I was already looking for any opportunity to get in court and get some experience. My focus throughout law school has always been on getting into the prosecutor's office. What can I do in these 3 years to best prepare me to prosecute as soon as I graduate? I was blessed to have that opportunity to work in both the state and federal courts, both on prosecution and defense side. This past summer, I worked for the United States Attorney's Office for the Middle District of Tennessee in the Criminal Division, and there I got to be in federal court all the time and work on some of the office's worst, most violent offenders. Now I get to do the exact same thing in state court with the Murfreesboro District Attorney's Office. And that's what I'm going to be talking about today, the differences in criminal law between the state and federal court systems, specifically in criminal sentencing. In the federal system, there's what's called the U.S. Sentencing Commission, which establishes guidelines that help judges decide on an appropriate sentence based on a number of factors, including the nature and circumstances of the offense and the history and characteristics of the defendant. These guidelines are only advisory, but in my experience, judges have tended to always stick to the guidelines recommendation. Federal laws also sometimes impose mandatory minimum and mandatory maximum sentences for certain crimes. After conviction, whether that be by plea or trial, a probation officer will prepare a PSR, or a pre-sentence report. This report includes details about the defendant's background, the nature of the offense, and any factors that might influence sentencing. For example, a convicted offender can receive a lesser sentence by helping the government in its investigation or by taking responsibility for the offense. In the PSR, the probation officer will calculate what the recommended guideline range is. Then, the court will conduct a sentencing hearing at which the judge will consider the PSR, input from the prosecution and defense, and any victim impact statements. The defendant will also have the opportunity to allocute. The judge has a lot of discretion in sentencing, and they are not bound by the guidelines. They can choose to sentence above or below the guidelines. There's also no parole in the federal system. More often than not, a defendant is assigned a term of imprisonment followed by 1 to 3 years of what's called supervised release, where they have to abide by a number of certain conditions following release from prison. This is very much like supervised probation in the state system. In Tennessee, crimes are categorized into different classes, with each class corresponding to a range of potential penalties. In the state system, Class A felonies are the most severe, and Class E felonies are the least severe. Each class has specific sentencing ranges. For example, Class A felonies carry a range of 15 to 60 years of life imprisonment, and Class E felonies are 1 to 6 years. Misdemeanors also have their own classes. Where you fall in this range depends on an offender's criminal history and other statutorily set factors. Tennessee uses a system called the Sentencing Reform Act of 1989, which classifies offenders into ranges based on prior felony convictions. And based on that history, an offender will fall into one of four ranges: Range 1, Range 2, Range 3, or Career Offender Range. The more felony convictions an offender has, the higher the range he falls in. After conviction, the judge will conduct a sentencing hearing. There, the judge will consider various factors, including the nature of the crime, the offender's history, and any mitigating or enhancement factors. The judge may also consider victim impact statements and any recommendations from the prosecution or defense. Like the federal system, state judges also have discretion in determining where within the range to sentence a defendant. Thank you for joining us, and that concludes this segment of What's the Law?
We got some good neighbors, and we like bragging on them. Nominate a good neighbor every day. Put it in writing on WGNS. WGNS. AM. FM. Online.
The Monthly District Attorney Show, heard exclusively on News Radio, WGNS, the first Friday of each month.
If you missed any part of this program, it will be available shortly as a podcast on the WGNS website.
As we end our program today, we thank our producer, Scott Walker. We thank WGNS for providing the airtime. Most of all, we thank you for listening. We leave by saying, a safe community is the responsibility of each and every one of us. For my two co-hosts, Jennings Jones and Trevor Lynch, this is Paul Newman, bidding all of you a safe and blessed day.
The District Attorney's Office thanks you for listening to today's program. If you have any information regarding criminal activity in our community, please contact one of our law enforcement agencies. The information presented on today's show is solely for informational benefit and not intended to be legal advice. You should always consult an attorney whenever you need or rely on legal advice. Rutherford County's most trusted name in news. Talk Radio WGNS, Murfreesboro.